Thank you for the welcome.
Shalom Aleich. Okay, here we go. This week's parsha, really, you learn it together with parsha Stazri, but this year we learn it separately. And there's literally two parts of the parsha. There is the laws of Tahara, when the mitzvah becomes Torah. Last week there were either five or six different sections, different situations where a person can become a mitzvah. A nega on his skin, a nega on his beard, a nega on the top of his head, the back of his head, a nega, what else, that comes after a burn, or a nega which comes after it gets shchin. And then also, we mentioned, incidentally, a negoyim that come on clothing. There's only one form of negoyim that was not discussed in last week's parasha, and that is discussed in this week's parasha, and that is with regard to negoyim that come on a home, on the stones of one home. But that's much later in the parasha. But before we get to that, though, over here, the Pesukim go from tell you what exactly are the procedure of what happens when the Negoim are over. So, this will be the law of the Mitzvah, B'yom Taharosai. On there is Tahara, and V'huvahi will be brought El HaKohen. Now, what is interesting over here is he's not yet Tahar. We're discussing on the day that he will become Tahar. Meaning they call up the Kohen and they say to the Kohen, you know, it appears that the Nega has gone away. Once a person is declared to be a Mitzvah Mukhlat, he's a confirmed Mitzvah, he sits in quarantine all alone, he's in lockdown, all alone, and nothing, he just does nothing the whole day. And he has to wait until the Nega disappears. I saw some very interesting midrashim about what exactly should he do. So there's a very interesting midrash that says his father, if this person has a father, he should come visit him and he should spit at him. And when the father spits at him, that's a segula, so to speak, that he should become tar. How do you know that? It's a pasuk. When Miriam was mitzvahs, so it says Hashem said to Moshe that she has to be locked up for 14 days. Avia yoroik yorak befaneha halosi koleim shivas yamim. If her father would have come and spit on her, who's her father? Amram. If Amram would have spit on her, wouldn't she be embarrassed to walk in the street for at least 7 days? So now when Hashem has insulted her by declaring her, making her into a mitzvah because she spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe, so Kol Shekein, she has to be locked up for 14 days. So what do you see from that story? That there's a very bizarre pasuk. If her father would have spit, I mean, you don't expect the Torah to talk like that. That's not the type of language that you would expect the Torah to use, but that's what it says. So what does that mean? I don't know what it means. But I saw this very fascinating message that says that some reason. Now, does it mean physically that the person's saliva has healing, is a healing quality? The Gemara says that the saliva of a firstborn has properties of healing. And maybe there's something to this over here. All right, in any event, right now, somehow, some way, I saw another medrash, another chazal that says that he should focus on bitochin. What do you do? A person gets saras. He's locked up. He's at home. He's in quarantine. What do you do? What do you do the whole day? What do you surf the web? What do you do the whole day when you're in quarantine? It doesn't say. It's very strange. You're all alone. Badad yeshev. You sit in total isolation. Solitary confinement. You can go out of your mind. You can literally lose your mind. What do you do the whole day? I don't know. It's a very big mystery, this whole thing of tzaras. But in any event, the person has to be in solitary confinement. Chazal say he should work on the midah of bitochin. He should learn choivas halavavis, shar habitochin. Spend time learning bitochin. Her father should come and spit. The person's father should come and engage in this activity of humiliating him by spitting on him. I don't know. It's strange stuff, right? Whatever the case is, this person now, he's been there for a long time. Whatever, you know, he can be like this. He can be in this matzah for years. He can be there in this matzah for a day, for a week, for a month. No one knows how long he can go on. He can endure. The nega must disappear. And this is not a physical nega. This is a supernatural nega. So it's purely in Hashem's domain when Hashem decides that the nega should go away. And when the nega goes away, then he makes a phone call. He sends a WhatsApp message to the Kohen. And he says, please, it appears that the nega has gone away. Please come and inspect me and declare me tahor. So that's exactly what happens. So this he is brought. Now it says something very interesting, but he doesn't go. He goes. He leaves quarantine and he goes to the Kohen. Okay? Now let's see Rashi. First, the inspection must take place by day. It says by day. There's a very big, a lot of different shilas about doing things by day, by night. Is a sofer allowed to write tefillin at night? So there are two issues. Firstly, you can't see what he's doing. You have your candlelight. And number two, you don't wear tefillin at night. If you don't wear tefillin at night, who says you can write tefillin at night? Are you allowed to make tzitzis at night? Because at night, you don't wear tzitzis. There's no mitzvah of tzitzis at night. Okay, what about, you know, classic cases, nida, marois. Is a rav allowed to paskin a marois at night? Because you need to see it with, you know, special natural light. And it's electricity, it may be very bright, but maybe that's not the right type of light that the Torah wants, whatever it is. Okay, that's a separate issue. Over here, the Kohen is examining the flesh of the Metzora. He has to make a determination that the white spot is no longer there, or even if it's there, it's no longer the shade of white which contaminates, or the color of the hair, the white hair, the yellow hair. A lot of different, you need to have a good pair of eyes. You need a good pair of eyes in order to be able to make the Psak Halacha. So the first Rashi, it's not done at night. What does the Targum say? Targum says, this is the law. This is the Iraisa, is the Torah. This Gira, we learned last week that the Targum's translation for the word Mitzvah is a person who is locked up. B'yoyma, on the day, didochu say that he becomes Tohor. V'yitei say he shall be presented. Levas to Kahana, the priest. Okay, Pasuk Gimel. V'yotza ha-kohen el michutz l'machaneh. Now, here's a stira. Because in the previous Pasuk, it says v'huva. V'huva means he will be brought. V'huva el ha-kohen. Now, notice in the English translation, look what he does over here. In the English translation, very strange, what he did over here, this shall be the ritual for the leper at the time of being purified, when it has been reported to the priest. What? Been reported? What are you talking about? It has been reported. Compare note at 13.2 to the priest. What note is this? I don't know. This 13.2. I don't know what he's talking about. We'll leave it for him right now. Been reported. Okay. What does Rashi say? Rashi did not make any comment. Uncle says, V'yitese does not mean report. V'yitese means he is presented. He is brought. He is taken. You pick him up and you take him to the priest. Okay, so, but what is the problem with this translation? Because the very next pasuk says that the Kohen goes to him. V'yotso ha-kohen el michutz l'machaneh. The Kohen, so who's going? Is he going or is the Kohen coming to him? It seems to be both. It seems they meet. They meet somewhere. The person is brought to the Kohen. He leaves his place of isolation. But the Kohen comes to him. The Kohen leaves the Gimel Machanos and meets him somewhere outside of the Gimel Machanos. Okay, fine. So now, v'yatsa koyin l'chutz machan nevrah koyin l'koyin sees v'hinei v'yichol nipar nega tzimun. Certainly he sees, v'rani see hakoyin, v'hinei. V'hinei is the unexpected. Whatever it says the word v'hinei in the entire Tanakh, it always means the unexpected. It's unexpected that a person should ever be healed from tzaras. Lo and behold, the unexpected. Nirpa, it has been healed. The nega hatzaras, min hatzarua, from the leper. Now, the word nirpa is an incredible word. In the entire parsha of Tazria, I do not believe it ever said the word nirpa. It never said the word choyle. We, in our limited vocabulary of Hebrew, use the word an illness, a choyle, and the word refuah. A person who's a choyle, we are mispalel for a refuah shalem. If a person is not sick, you don't generally use the word refuah. Roifei choylei amo Yisrael. Hashem heal the choylei. You don't say rofei the person if he's not sick. When did this person ever, was he ever called a choyle that it is appropriate to use the term nirpa? A negat saras does not appear, according to most opinions, to be something that is spiritual. Something that is physical, It is a spiritual state, it is a statement. Hashem has made a statement. This individual is a sinner. He has spoken Lashon Hara. He is arrogant. He has committed some other Avera. And Hashem over here is upset. He's disturbed. And Hashem has made a statement. You are going to be expelled from the Machane. I'm going to put upon you a white spot. Get out of here. Do teshuva. But he's not sick. There's no illness. There's no choyli. There's no sickness. He doesn't need medical care, this individual. So yet, why do we call him, use the word nirpa? Okay, so this is a question which needs to be answered. But let's just keep that in mind. Nirpa, it has been healed. The nega. The nega means a wound, right? But it's not a real wound here. Or whatever it is. Hatzaras min hatzarua. Rashi says, El michutz l'machne, the Kohen goes b'chutz l'machne, chutz l'shlosh l'machnes, k'shenishtalach b'sham b'mei chaluto. A mitzoyra is expelled from gimel machnes. This machne shechina, machne levia, and machne Yisrael. Machne shechina is the Azor. Machne levia is the Harabais. Machne Yisrael is the Yerushalayim. Now, in all the other cities that have a wall around it, so it's just one big machne, machne Yisrael, he has to leave Machane Yisrael. Let's say over here, for the sake of simplicity, he has to leave Yerushalayim, and the Kohen is going to go. Okay, Rashi doesn't say anything more. Uncle says, V'yipokahana l'miboro. The Kohen will go outside. The word miboro, like the word braisa. Braisa means the outside mishnais. L'mash risa. Outside of the camp. The Yechazei will look. Chahana, he will give a look. The ha'itasi, this always found in the Gemara, this word, healed. The machtash, we had this last week, machtash means the wound, the nega. The skin has been bruised. It has been crushed. Sigirusa means the tzaras. Tzaras is called sigirusa miloshon sogar. A person that's a mitzvah must be put locked up. Min sigira, from the person who's called the mitzvah. Okay, that's all we got here. We have to go further. V'tzivah ha'ke, the Kohen gives a command. V'lokach ha'lamit ha'her, sh'tei tziponim chayos t'arois, v'etz eretz v'shni solas v'ezov. Okay, the Kohen says, you're tahar. Now we begin a procedure. And the Kohen gives the command. He puts in an order. Like he writes a prescription to the pharmacy. And they shall take for the lamit ha'her, for the person that is now going to begin a process of tahar. It's a very long, complex process. The first thing he needs is two birds. Shtei tziporim, two living birds that are tohoyois. Tohoyois means kosher. Kosher birds. Ve'etz eretz, a piece of cedar. And ushni soiloas, crimson wool that has been dyed crimson. I guess it's a shade of red. And ve'ezav is grass, hyssop. So what do we have? We have two birds. Two kosher living birds. And it's Erez, That's two items. Shnei Torlas is three items, and Ezoiv is Hyssop, four. So four different items. Two birds, cedar, a piece of cedar, a piece of red string, and Hyssop. Rashi says these are they're going to get these things. Chayos prat l'treifos. So each word Rashi is going to dash. Chayos means make sure, even though they're kosher birds, chayos, they're not defective. They don't have any health issues. To chayos, kosher birds, prat l'oif tamei, l'fi shahanagoim, boim al loshon harosh, l'hi masa putei devarim, chirping. L'fi chach, chuzkaku l'tohar wasoy tziponim, shemifat petin tamid b'tzivtsuf koil. Rashi over here is going to a medrash, and it's telling us, the Gemara is telling us over here, is that the reason why the Torah wants him to use birds is because he wants to remind the person of what is Aveira. Why did he become a mitzvah? Because he spoke Lashon Hara. When a person speaks Lashon Hara, he speaks Lashon Hara, he's mefatpet. He moves his lips, and he speaks gossip, and he causes people pain. Therefore, his atonement will come through a creature in this world that does exactly what he does. A creature that moves its lips a lot and makes a lot of noise. He looks at these birds and he realizes he is the bird. He is the big bird. He talks too much, he moves less and chirps like a bird. Next, the eight series, white cedar, lefisha hanagoyim boim al gasa seruch gaiva, arrogance. Eight series is a symbol for arrogance. Ushni solas, crimson, and hyssop, matakonosa viyisrape, yash vil atzmoy, humble yourself. Migavosoi kitoilas, like a worm, uche ezoiv, and like a blade of grass. Now, where is the worm? What worm? There's a piece of wool that's dyed red. So Rashi understands, this is a chiddush of Rashi, is that when it says shni toilas, it's the dye. It's not so much the wool. What's important is the dye. How do you make wool red? You take worms. There's a special type of worm. And this worm, its blood or its glands, it secretes a certain type of chemical, and when this chemical is applied to the wool becomes red. So when you look at this piece of red cloth, what do you think about? You think about worms, because worm is what produces the red color. A worm is a lowly creature, and grass is a lowly object, and the musar is the person has sinned for two reasons. Right over here, Rashi over here is telling us there are two primary reasons why a person gets harassed. Number one, because he spoke Lashon Hara. Number two, because he's arrogant. And the solution is, humble yourself from your arrogance, which I guess was the catalyst to speak Lashon Hara. Be like a worm and be like an Eitz Nezev. This is what Rashi says. What is Eitz Erez? A makel shel Erez, a club. A club, a baseball bat. A stick that's made from cedar. Shni Talas, a garm, a cord of its red lashon shel tzemer. Now I said shni, it's not a cord. I made a mistake. It's not a cord. Shni Talas, that I learned them shnayis. It's not a cord. It's tough. It's a tongue. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing. I'm saying the right word. It's a chunk. Not a, what is it called? It's called a tough. Does anyone can help me with the correct word? Yet you have a large piece of wool. What is the correct English word to describe a large chunk, a large piece of wool? A tongue? No, that's not the right word. Tough? I don't know what the word is. Anyone know what it is? Mayor. What do you call this mayor? A big, big chunk of wool.
Well, it's a tongue. In the footnote in
a tongue?
Yeah, it's called tongue.
Like a tongue. Okay, a tongue of wool. That's what it's called in English, which means a nice chunk. A nice.
The reason it's called tongue, he says, because it was a practice to comb it into long tongue-like strips. Written from Sefer Zikaron.
Okay, it's a big piece of wool, which we call a tongue of wool, which is combed, and you're going to dye this in a special.
It could also be when you're talking about wool, wool or cotton.
Wool, only wool.
Has natural oil in it. It's called lanolin.
Yeah.
So when you have cotton, when you have wool, it's very like it's has a slippery thing on it.
So why is it called? It's a fine, whatever. It's a tongue of wool. It's a big piece of wool.
Wet like a tongue of wool.
Lashon shel tzev. Oh, that's why he's saying the oil is what makes it wet. The wool, an animal, he's saying there's wetness. There's some moisture on it. Interesting. Very interesting. That's why you want to say it's called the lashon. That's a very interesting idea. He's saying real wool from an animal has a certain wetness. You know, you're right, because I remember I once went to a farm and there were sheep, and the sheep has wool, and we were playing with the sheep. And you're right, when you feel the sheep, it is like wet. It feels wet. The wool on a sheep, on a living sheep, there's a dampness. But the truth is, it's not water. It's like what you're saying, there's a certain natural oil.
Lanolin. It's called lanolin. They use it in hair products.
So that is why it's called a tongue, because just like a human being, his tongue, it's just a piece of meat, but there's a moisture on it. So too, the tongue, the wool also has like a sensation of wetness. When you touch raw wool on the back of an animal, it feels wet, even though it's not wet. It's a very strange type of thing. You know, we used to have, remember my father, they had a Sefer Torah, there was a garotel. And the garotel on the Sefer Torah, it always felt wet. I can't describe it. I used to lay in there sometimes, so I don't know. Every time I touched the garotel, I thought it was wet. And I even like examined it, and it wasn't wet. It was dry as can, but somehow there was a certain texture that it had. It felt wet. So maybe that's why we're calling a Lashon Shel Tzemer. Learn something new here. Very interesting. Lashon Tzemer, you're saying that's why it's called a tongue, because the tongue has that same property. It's not really wet, but it is wet. Fine. Okay, and it's Savua, Shel Tzemer, Savua, it's dyed Zehoir. What is Zehoir? In English, it's always called crimson. What is crimson? I don't know. It's a shade of red. There's a special shade. I'm not familiar with these colors, but it's a certain shade of red. To me, it looks red. Okay, so that's all Rashi says. Rashi's not going into anything technical over here. He just translates, just telling you more drush. Now, what did the Targum say? What's the more? V'fakeid kahana. Okay, Eile pikudei. We learned this today. Pikudei Hashem yisharim esamchei leif. Here you have the word v'fakeid, but this is Aramaic. Aramaic, this is not Hebrew, but Aramaic and Hebrew are cousins. They interchange sometimes. And this is a very good, we learned this, and that's how we learned, today. Today we learned Pikudei Hashem Yesharim. And here you see the word Pikudei Vifakeid is the translation of the word Vitziva, the commandments, the Pikudei Hashem. The Ibn Ezra and the Radak said the word Pikudei means a Pikodoin, something that Hashem has deposited, a deposit. But over here, Unkelis is very interesting, translates the word bibaket as the tziva, command. So that would fit much better in what we learned this morning. Because this morning we learned about there are mishpatim, there's yiras Hashem, mishpatim, there are mitzvahs. Oh, maybe that's why. Maybe that's why they couldn't say, because it says the word mitzvahs. So it already says a mitzvah. A mitzvah is miloshon tziva. It would be repetitious. It would be repetitious, or maybe not. Maybe you could say, you know, anyway, all the same similar words. But the word, no, so maybe it's no, makes more sense. Because the word, you see that the Aramaic translation of the word tziva is vifakeid. So it would make sense that we learned this morning, Pikudei Hashem, it basically means the commandments. It's a synonym for the word tzivos, the tziva of Hashem. There's the mitzvahs, and there are the tzivos. They're really the same word, but it's a different word. Fine. So vifakeid, it's a very good thing to know over here. This is a very important word. The Kohen will give a command. V'yisav l'midach, and he will, and v'yisav, what does it mean, v'yisav? He will take. Okay, he will say, he'll take l'midake. Okay, v'lokach is not the same word as hevi. Hevi means, hava means to bring. The word lokach means to take. Okay, v'yisav l'midake, for the person who is going to be purified. Tartein tziprin chayin dochyon, two birds that are alive, that are tohar, which means two kosher birds. V'a'a, a means wood. wood, the arza of cedar. Utseva zehoiri. Okay, so this is, we have machlokes Rashi and Unkelis. Rashi says that the word ushni toilas. Okay, this is a little bit complicated. Ushni, we learned, is wool that is dyed. Let's go back to Rashi for one sec, because here machlokes here. This is good. This is what we try to do here. Ushni tolas. What is shni tolas? The very Rashi at the end. Loshoin shel tzemer tzavua zehoiris. So the word shani appears to be a word which means wool, and toilas is the worm, because Rashi himself said ki toilas. So toilas means a worm, and the worm loshon shel tzemer tzavua died zehoiris. Rashi adds in the word loshon shel tzemer. The only word that can mean wool is the word shani, wool, a tongue of wool that is dyed the color, the blood, or the an extract of a worm. Unkelis appears to disagree. We actually learned this. I don't know, and we didn't learn this possibly. We learned about in the Mishkan, the shni toilas. In the different colors of the Mishkan, we spent a lot of time on this. What exactly does it mean, shni toilas? And obviously, it was a machlekes. There's machlekes here as well. Over here, the Targum says, utseva zehoiri. So, what does it mean? The word shni, according to the Perush of Unkelis, appears to be a color. It means a color, a dye. It does not mean wool. Toilas, it would seem, we can still preserve what Rashi says. It means the color red, because there's a worm, and the worm has some type of a chemical. And when that chemical is extracted and applied to the wool, it produces, to our eyes, a red color. So the word zilhari means red, or more accurately, crimson. And the word utseva, where did that word come from? That's the word shani. It just means a dye. Which color? You go into a hardware store, there are literally thousands of colors you can get. It's a dye, the color of red. That's what it says in time, Unkelis. Ve'ezoiv, ezoiv is, ve'ezoiva. Ezoiva is grass. The Ezoiva. Okay, so we have Machloikis, Rashi, and Unkelis, the precise meaning of the word Shni. Next, what do you do? Vitziva ha'akra, and the point gives a command, Vishachani slaughters, Esatzipar ha'achos, one of the birds, El Klicheres, upon a Klicheres, Al Mayim Chayim. Now, this is another two items. It's not enough to have two birds and eight eres, Ushni Tolas, and Ezoiv. You have to also have a Klicheres. And you have to have, in the Klicheres, you have to have water, mayim chayim, water that comes from a spring, not from a mikvah, from a spring water. And you have to have a knife. You have to have a knife to do shchita. Now, this is very interesting because generally, in the Torah, nowhere does it say that a bird, you do shchita. In the Beis HaMikdash, how did they slaughter the bird? Malika. In the Beis HaMikdash, when a person brought a carbon with a bird, there is no knife. There is no tool that is used to slaughter the bird. All the korbanos were slaughtered through melika. And melika means you take the bird and you put your thumb. The Kohen would insert his thumb into the back of the neck. And that would...
What's the pshat? The language of the pasuk is very unusual. It's siva Kohen. Normally it just says, Rishachat has said siva, oh, he slaughters the bird.
So look at Rashi. What did Rashi in the previous pasuk? This is the second time it says what it's siva. In the previous pasuk, also you're right. Rashi didn't say anything in the previous pasuk. You're right. I don't know what is this. I think maybe there's a Gemara about this. We're very limited. We're just learning Rashi and Unkelis. There are many other mefarshim that certainly dwell upon the siva. For some reason, that in my mind there's a piece of Gemara that discusses what it means. The word it's siva. I don't remember. There's a Chazal that talks about why it says Vitziva Vitziva. But you're right, on a very simple level, it is strange, you're right. And it sounds like he's not necessarily doing it. The Kohen is giving the orders. Why doesn't the Kohen do it? I don't know. But let's see, let's a little go further. Vitziva, when he gives a command, Vishachat. Vishachat, and who shall slaughter? The Kohen or someone else? He's giving the orders, he's not doing the Shechita. But it's very important to know that this is the only time you find in the Torah is slaughter of a bird. Because by korbanos there is no slaughter. It's done through melika. And when it comes to animals and when it comes to shechita, it doesn't even say the word shechita by a regular, like bizman hazeh. Today, how do you know today when you eat meat, if you eat a piece of meat, how do you know that the animal needs shechita? It only says the word shechita by a korban. It doesn't say the word shechita by an animal of chulin. It uses a different word. Vizovachta kasher vizovachta l'chol avas nafshecha. The term the Torah uses regarding the slaughter of meat of chulin that we do today, the word is vizovachta, which is also not the word that you would expect. It only says the word shechita in the Torah with regard to a korban, an animal. With regard to meat of chulin, it used the word vizavachta. And with regard to birds, it doesn't say anything. Nothing. So how do you even know that you'll not even eat birds? Well, the Torah says, v'zoyz asher techelu. It's the Farish HaPosek. It says in Parash HaShmini, in Parash HaSra'eh, it tells you the birds that you may not eat, which means that you're allowed to eat everything else. But how then do you know that if you want to eat a kosher bird, you need to do shechita? Maybe you can take its life in other ways. In Purdue, they electrocute the birds. They don't slaughter the birds. So maybe we can do the same thing bisman hazeh. Halacha l'moshe misinai. The reason why we need to do shechita on a bird, and you need to slaughter at least one roiv of one simon, an animal is roiv of two simonim, all of these things are basically halacha l'moshe misinai. At least by an animal, it says what it is avachta. By a bird, it does not say anything at all. Purely halacha l'moshe misinai. But it says in the Torah the word shechita. It only says shechita by the birds of the mitzora. Birds that are offered as korbanos inside the Beis HaMikdash, melika, not shechita. Chulin, it says nothing. A bird that belongs as part of the set of two birds that the Mitzorah is bringing outside the Beis HaMikdash as part of the beginning of his process, it's the only place where it says Shechita. So what that means? We're all Mitzorahim. That's what it really means. Because every time you eat poultry, every time we eat poultry, how did this get on our table? Somebody slaughtered it. Where is the only place where it says slaughter? By the Mitzorah. It's a potent reminder not to be Mitzi Shem Ra every time we, and not to be arrogant. It's a potent reminder every time we eat bird meat, there was a Shechita. The only place it says Shechita is by a Mitzorah. And Rashi says a Mitzorah has two problems. He talks too much and he's arrogant. And the person should learn not to talk so much and to be humble. That's quite a bit of Musar. Okay, so Vitziva Akron Vishachar Asiva Achas, he slaughters it. Where? El Klicheris, on top of an earthenware utensil which is filled with Al Mayim Chayim, water from a spring. Rashi. Al Mayim Chayim, Noisin Oisam Techil Bechli. The water goes in the utensil first. Kadeshi Hei Dam Tzipor Nikar Bohem. So that when the Shechita takes place, the blood will drip from the neck of the animal and fill up the utensil, and that will be a taruvis of water and blood, and it will be obvious, the blood will be noticeable, because until now it was clear, it was water. Fine. The kamahim, how much water must be in the utensil? A revius, the same amount you put in the kiddush cup, which la halacha is 3 ounces. Halacha lemaisa, a revius is 3 ounces. 3 ounces of water in a klicheres, shechita is done, blood will drip into this water, and now it will be red, a mixture of water and blood, it's going to be noticeable. Targum. Targum says, "Vifakeh kahana," he'll give a command. V'yikois, yikois is means shechita. That's the word for slaughter. V'yikois, we had it many times. Yas, the tzipra chada, the bird, one bird. Leman dachasaf. Now this is a little bit confusing. Leman, I guess it means towards. Dachasaf. Dachasaf means cheres. Al mei mabua. Mei mabua means flowing water. Now this bothers me very much, so I want to see what it says. What it says. This is Parshas, the beginning of Parshas Metzora. What does this word mean over here? Okay, Leman Dachasaf. This is Pasuk 5. Pasuk 5. Chada. Okay, here it is. Leman. I'm reading you what it says. Leman. Kosav Rabbi Avraham ben Ezra. Masha Kosav El Klicheres. Hu Kimo Al. On top. V'chein El Hanar Hazeh Hispalalti. Concerning. V'chein Loshna Mishnah. Shochar Esachas Mehem. Al Klicheres. Avel ein zo das unkeles. Shaloi tirgim al kdech shatirgim hamilo el biberacious. So he's saying over here there's something very important going on over here. He's making a big issue about this. Lemon means. What's lemon mean? Lemon means towards. See, he's saying some very heavy duty stuff over here. V'fakeid kana v'yikois yot sipor chado l'man, l'man dachasaf. What's dachasaf mean? He doesn't want to translate over here. He's not giving us too much help over here. Al-mim-mim-abuah, k'mashakot, the next thing is a long parish over in the next part of it over here. But that's not what we want to talk about. No, he's not really explaining. So I don't know, there's something very big going on over here. It says El. What does it mean El Klicheres? El literally means, it seems that there's a very big debate if the word El means upon, or El means inside, or towards. Towards a Klicheres, Al Mayim Chayim, and the Klicheres has inside of it Mayim Chayim. Al Mei Mabur. Alright, so let me go read what it says over here in the Perush for Al Mei Mabur. Maybe I'll become clear. I'm going to read further. Kemasha Kosav Rabbi Avraham Ben Ezra. Shemayim Chayim Perushoi Loichem Mimokam Novea Ki Amayim Anoivim Meharitz Misna'anim Umispashtim Tamid. You take water that's flowing. Ulochem Nikm Chayim Kemasha Enke Meibor Mikve Andim Kemesim Belit Tenua. Now he's just coming to explain over here the meaning of the word Mayim Chaim. He's not really coming to explain over here how the significance of how these words over here come together with the other word. So basically we have to assume what it means over here is there does appear to be a machlokes between what the Gemara says, at least. Rashi, this, what does Rashi say? Al Mayim Chaim, Rashi has no comment. We have to take note that there's a difference between the word al and the word el. Very, very often the word el is identical to the word al. It would appear, the Targum is saying, that you only can say that when you only have the word el. But when you have both the word el and the word al, see, this is the earline. Here it is. El, al. El Al. There are actually two psukim that say El Al. That would be a great place to analyze this whole concept. El Al. El means towards up. To go towards the sky. El means towards. You will slaughter the living bird, El, towards a klicheres. Al, upon Mayim Chayim. What does that mean? What does that mean exactly? Upon Mayim Chayim. It would seem, if I would not know better, you do not slaughter the bird. You do not slaughter the bird on top of the utensil. If I wouldn't know better, I would think the pasuk is coming to tell you that you go to a fountain, you go to a spring that is flowing, and you slaughter the bird on the you slaughter the bird on the spring. And then the spring gets full of blood. And then the spring, the bloody stream trickles down. You then take a kli cheres and you scoop up from the spring some of the water that is mixed with the blood. That's not the pasuk pshat. If you ask the average person what is going on here, they'll tell you, oh, it's very simple. You take a kli cheres, and then you fill up the kli cheres with spring water. So now I have in my possession a kli cheres that has spring water inside. What do you do next? You take a bird and you slaughter the bird on top of the kli cheres, which has the water. And then the blood falls into the kli. So what do you have now? You have a mixture of blood with spring water contained in a kli cheres. And in fact, that's what it says in the Gemara. That's what it says in the Gemara. Let me read you the words of the Gemara. The Gemara says, he says, Ma shekas el kli cheres, k'may al, okay, this is the Ibn Ezra. El is to be translated according to the Ibn Ezra. It's really a Gemara, like it says al. Al. V'cheinu loshna mishne, shochar es achat, as achas mehen, al kli cheres. It's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says explicitly, you slaughter the bird on top of a kli cheres that already has inside of it mayim chai. But the author of this sefer, the Ma'atzari, who is a really heavy-duty person, says that may be what it says in the Mishnah, but we know that not everything that it says in the Mishnah is the only interpretation. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he was very selective. And many times when he says a halacha in the Mishnah, he's compiling what he wants to be the halacha. He has an agenda. This is the halacha that I hold this to be the way that is practiced. But when you go back to earlier sources, you discover that what he necessarily, he did a lot of things that he said, you go back to the Medrash halacha, there are other opinions. It's not the only opinion. And over here, what it says in the Ma'atzari, he's telling you that what it says here in Unkelis is not what it says in the Mishnah. Because if it was what it said in the Mishnah, the Targum would not use the word leman. He would not use that word leman dachasaf. Leman dachasaf means towards a kli cheres. I think it means towards. Dachasaf means pottery. Al mei mabua, upon water that is flowing from a spring. What does that mean? It would seem to me, what it means is, you don't slaughter the bird on top of the utensil. You slaughter the bird on top of the stream. And now the stream is full of blood. And then the kli cheres is positioned down the stream, just slightly from where you do the slaughter. And you submerge it in its path. And then as the dirty water, the water which has in it, you know, the natural water from the spring, and now it's dirty with the blood, as it trickles down the stream, it fills up, it goes into the kli cheres, and you pick it up. And now I have a kli cheres that I have drawn water from the spring, I've drawn bloody water from the spring. That's what it would appear that the Targum is saying. And that's not the halacha, because Rabbeinu HaKadosh decide that's not the halacha. It doesn't mean that it's wrong, because there are other opinions. And the Targum could very well be taken from something deep. We have to be analyzing, you know, what it says elsewhere. The Targum Unkelis really came first. No, it really came first, Targum. So this is what gives me satisfaction in the shir, is to bring out these type of these nuances. These nuances where you see that what we've been taught all along is not the only pshat. The other mahalchan understanding of the procedure. Okay, we're going to stop here. Thank you all very much for coming. Have a wonderful evening.
Good night, Rabbi.
Good night, everyone.
Rabbi Levine.
Yes.
No question. Something with the sorry. So you know, one of the things I noticed is going through the whole process of making the Matzari Taha. It doesn't say, in other words, what happens to the bird that you don't send away. You shef the bird, you take the dam, you put it.
So it says it says the Farish in the Medrash, you bury it. There's a. It could be seen in the Gemara. You bury. Why do you bury it? Number one, it's aser behana. Second reason why you bury it is because the second reason why you bury it is because no one should suspect that you ate it. In other words, it's not enough to throw it in the garbage. The bird that you slaughter is aser behana, and in order no one should eat it, no one should be nichshel in eating it, and especially no one should accuse the person himself who did this. It says beferish, it must be buried.
The bird
that you slaughtered.
So you're not going to say, can't be. So no, you can't eat it. Okay.
No, you cannot eat it. Bird must be buried. Now, the bigger question is, what do you do with the other bird? The other bird.
You send it away,
said,
right?
Yeah, so someone's going to find it. And the person is going to find it may actually end up eating, slaughtering and eating it. So is that permitted?
Or maybe you could bring it for another carbon, no? Or...
Yeah, maybe that bird's going to fly away, right? You send the other bird, it's going to fly away. And what's going to happen? Someone's going to find it, and they're going to either eat it or bring it as a carbon. So some say, gesundheit. Why not? Then once you did what you're supposed to do with this bird, you're supposed to dip it in the blood and send it away. You've done what you're nasa mitzvah, so that's it. You're finished. Others say that it was a special hashgacha pratis. The bird that was sent away, it was killed. It was attacked by other birds. Why? When other birds see that this bird is stained in blood, they make an assumption that this bird is a murderer. And the other birds, they see it and they kill it. It's killed. Now that's very strange because it's innocent. It didn't do anything wrong. Why is being suspected? You're setting up this bird. You know what the real truth is? This is really fits very well with Lashon Hara. Because what are you really doing? You're doing something that's very unfair to this bird. You're dipping the living bird in the blood of the dead bird. You're basically planting evidence, false evidence upon this bird. You then send it away. This bird doesn't know how to clean itself. It flies away. And other birds see it, and they see, look at this bird. There's blood on it.
Right.
How'd the blood get here? There's evidence that you're a criminal. You committed murder. They go to the bird, and they kill it. So you, the Kohen, or Vitziva HaKohen, whoever was doing it, is basically setting it up, planting false evidence for it to suffer. Isn't that exactly what a person does when he speaks Lashon Hara? When you speak Lashon Hara, you're putting on the person false information that he's now a target for punishment by other people.
Right.
What?
Send away the bird. It's a gezeira shekasu. The coin doesn't.
So what is the lumdus? I'm trying to suggest, what's the lumdus? What is the lumdus of sending away the bird? The lumdus is to say, you should say to yourself, this is not fair. The Medrash says, it says in the Medrash that when you would send away the bird, the living bird, being that it's soiled in blood, what's going to happen is it's going to fly away, far away, and it's not going to realize how much the blood is still on its body, and other birds are going to see it, and they're going to come to the conclusion that the bird that has the blood on its body is a murderer. How else did the blood get there? And they're going to kill it. They're going to execute it. So when you're dipping the living bird in the blood of the dead bird, you're setting up the bird, you're putting on the bird false evidence, you're setting it up for execution. That is not fair. That's not fair. So what do you say? Guess what? I did the same thing. If I spoke Lashon Hara, what did I do? I did the same thing. I set it up. I set up someone. I took a person who's a good, innocent person. I spoke bad things about him. I put upon him evidence that's false. And now all the people are going to stay away from him. They're going to treat him like garbage because of me. It's terrible. this is a technique for the Metzora, for him to humble himself. Now, you're true, the bird, obviously, you know, the bird is obviously, it's suffering, but you're using the bird for your advantage. All right, that's an idea. No, so then you can say the carbon, it goes to the Mizbeach. Then that's much better. Like every time we do carbon.
But the carbon, also Shechtus is really, you know, the person to be...
Okay, it's a lesson. It's a lesson, right. You have to say that because it's not fair. You know, what are you doing to the poor bird? Look, when you bring an animal carbon, so it's not fair. I did an Avera, and an animal has to die? If I did not do an Avera, the animal would not die. So it's right. Only because of me, the animal has... That's not fair. Listen, that's none of our business. That's not our business. Hashem said, bring the animal. The animal's going to die. It's going to be a kapara for you. Is it fair to the animal? That's not our business. Here, the bird is being set up. Is it fair to the bird? No. It's none of our business. Hashem wants to use this bird as a dogma for us. Right. What did you do? You set up a person to suffer. So, I want to illustrate that to you. By taking this bird, you're putting on it blood, you're sending it away. It's a dogma of what you did to someone else.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go. Rabbi Yisai, thank you for coming. Zay gezunt.